The floor is yours.
Good morning. Daniel Prusin with BNA. A question for Director General Lamy. Surprise, surprise. In your intervention this morning, Director General, you talked about the DOE agreement on access to medicines. You pointed out that there's only one country which has actually utilized the agreement to import medicines, and you said this shouldn't be taken as an indication of the success or the failure of the agreement, that actually we should be looking at pricing of medicines. And I was wondering, you didn't elaborate on that a little bit. Why is this an agreement a success on that point? What evidence do you have that prices of medicines have been affected and gone down as a result of this agreement? Thank you.
Well, I mean, I confirm that at the end of the day, we have to benchmark success or failure with realities on the ground and not with the number of times a procedure is used, not least because the procedural requirements which stem from the new TRIP text leave a rather wide margin of maneuver to members on how they implement these specific flexibilities. On pricing and availability on the ground, this is not for WTO as such. We are working together with WHO, who has the necessary information and network, and to a lesser extent with WIPO. And at the end of the day, my real sort of radar on this is the annual review, which we do with our members on the implementation of these paragraph C flexibilities. This question, whether or not it works, is open every year on the occasion of this review. And our members, who I expect know more than we do in the Secretariat of WTO about realities on the ground, express their views. And I'm particularly attentive to the view of the African group, not least because of the HIV, TBT, malaria focus of these flexibilities, insofar as medicines which are needed are patented. Until now, and that has been true every year, the African group in this review has not suggested changes. And again, they have the initiative, not the Secretariat, not myself. They have the internal coordination among themselves in order to prepare this review. So on this, I'm in the hands of members. Until now, no member in WTO, starting with the most concerned, which is the African group, has raised the necessity of changing this legal part of the toolbox we have.
Good morning, Marcelo Nino for the São Paulo, Brazil. Question to Mr. Gurry and also to Mr. Lamy. Which lessons from the flexibilities in the, regarding medicines and patents should be applied to green, clean technologies, in your opinion?
Well, at the moment, I think we're still at a fairly early stage in assessing intellectual property in relation to green technologies, but I think several things are apparent. First of all, that we're dealing with different sorts of technologies from those in other areas such as pharmaceuticals. So in the case of green technologies, what we notice is that, first of all, I think there's a fairly commonly held view that many of them are off-patent, and so you don't have such a concentration of intellectual property protection in relation to the latest technologies. Secondly, I think we find that as far as green technologies are concerned, there are a lot of substitute technologies available. So the landscape that presents itself for green technologies is, I think, a very different one from that which we would find in certain other public policy areas. That said, one of the main thrusts that seems to be under discussion at the moment is how to incentivize innovation in green technologies and whether any specific measures might be adopted in relation to the patent system which might increase the incentive to actually invest in and deploy, commercialize green technologies. So here I don't think we're talking about the question of intellectual property as a barrier, but the question of intellectual property as a facilitator for ensuring that the right sorts of investment occur in relation to innovation.
Well, I mean, I concur with what Francis just said. As far as TRIPS is concerned, compulsory licensing is available elsewhere than in medicines. It's not reserved to medicines. But it's true that the landscape in medicines and the landscape in, let's call them, green technology is very different for the reason Francis gave, plus for one other reason, which is that one of the big problems we have in access to medicines, which is related to availability on the ground, which is the whole problem of medicines distribution. And as you know, medicines distribution is something which is extremely complex. It needs huge networks. It needs a lot of safety, precaution. The issue is much simpler with green technology. I mean, in green technology, we do not have this basic problem of how will the advantage of a new technology be distributed, be sort of made available to the final consumer. It's a much simpler landscape. Now, this being said, and WIPO knows this because you've been debating this notably yesterday, this is one of the focus for Copenhagen, together with the issue of finance in sort of a number of elements which would facilitate the overall big balance which has to be found on the fundamental question of who emits how much of CO2 when, which remains the core problem of Copenhagen, but discussions, orientations, agreements on technology transfer or on finance can obviously be a sort of oiling factor.
Thank you, Rias, the Third World Network. I'd like to know what focus is there on increasing the generative capacity of developing countries in terms of processes to incentivize investment in green technology? And number two, the WTO took a stand on swine flu and SPS with relation to what level of protection should be appropriate. Would similar measures be taken by the WTO in relation to countries trying to use compulsory licenses, in a green way?
Let me make a comment on the first, if I may. I think that a central element that we see going up to Copenhagen is the question of transfer of technology. With in relation to green technologies. So the question is, it's another distinction from, let's say, the pharmaceutical area, where you're looking at the delivery of medicines or access to the final product, as it were. In the green technology area, one of the things that's very important is, let's say, the know-how and having the technologies deployed all around the world, not the result of the technology, if you like. So a very, very important question is transfer of technology, and of course that's at the heart of, as Pascal Lamy has said, it's at the heart of the overall balance and deal that is sought to be struck in Copenhagen. What's going on in that regard is that, of course, I think, certainly speaking for WIPO, there is a great deal of emphasis on capacity building with respect to transfer of technology. It's a complex process because here you're dealing with how to actually develop the capacity for the utilization of technologies, some of which are reasonably complex technologies, and their deployment on the ground.
On the question about whether the WTO would interpret the TRIPS as it provides under some conditions for compulsory licensing for green technology, we are always extremely prudent in interpreting the WTO agreements. The rule in WTO, as in many other international organizations, is that the interpretation of the agreements is in the hands of members. And this is all the more true in WTO that we have a litigation system that is there to decide whether interpretation A by one member and interpretation B by another member, what's the right interpretation. And the Secretariat and the WTO DG has to be extremely careful, even in commenting the quote-unquote jurisprudence of the dispute settlement system, including the appellate body. Now, the stance we took on H1N1 on trade is not a question of interpretation. The WTO agreements allow members to use obstacle to trade to protect the health of people, plants, animals. So the question was, in that case, is there a threat to human health that justifies obstacle to trade? It's not for the WTO to assess the threat to human health, which is why we left this determination in the hands of WHO, in the hands of the International Office for Animal Health, and in the hands of the Food and Agricultural Organization, who are the places where knowledge, science, solid expertise is whether or not H1N1 was related to the trade in pork. And their answer was no, which is why we published, together with them, relying on their expertise, and it's not our expertise, it's their expertise, and they are specialized in this expertise, and this is why we published this joint communique, which made the link between the health protection problem, and there are many health protection problems related to this H1N1 pandemic, but it just happened that they are not related to pork meat, which is what basically, in a nutshell, OIE, WHO, and FAO said. And again, I'm not, it's in a nutshell because the language was a bit more complex than that, but that's the idea.
Yes, sir. For the gentleman from IFAD, if you could tell us what is your perspective on the same subject, basically, licensing, but on seeds. There's all the debate about GMOs and the use in Africa. What is what is the perspective of, for example, breaking patents on a specific seed in order to produce?
Thank you. The gentleman from IFAD is Kenayo Wanze. We have a rather very flexible approach. First and foremost, we believe that the debate on GMOs in Africa is not so much as whether they are already in Africa or not, but seeing how we can help national partners to develop their own capacities to be able to assess the biosafety status of those introductions. I've been in a lot of debate where the discussions go very far into whether GMOs are good or bad in the African context. And we say, listen, build your capacities to be able to assess the biosafety aspects of these. And there are probably no more than 4 or 5 countries that have biosafety regulations or the protocols. South Africa, Kenya, Egypt, Nigeria currently just has a framework, not even a regulation. So these are the basic necessities. But coming back on GMOs, I think it's important, and this is IFAD's position, that for most of Africa, we're looking at smallholder farmers. They make up 80% of the farming community. And their preoccupation right now is how to increase their own productivity with existing technologies. And Africa is yet to exploit available technologies that transformed Asia and Latin America in the 70s with the Green Revolution. Less than 5% of arable land is irrigated, and most of that is in Egypt. And Africa uses about 8 kilograms per hectare of fertilizers on the average, compared to 120 kilograms in Asia. So the basic technologies are yet to be fully exploited, and we know the reasons why. Government policies still are not favorable to farmers. Market linkages are, in most cases, non-existent. Simple infrastructures are not there. And market linkages, both for input and output markets, in most cases, are a problem. The last mile, I would refer to the last mile, linking farmers from their remote areas to major roads. So the issues here are not so much as, you know, GMOs, is how and when would African leaders recognize that the most important thing today is for them to put agriculture at the top of the priority, to give it the political leadership that it needs to bring about a transformation and to increase productivity to the levels that they can feed themselves and not be totally dependent on food aid. And having said that, I think too many times we confuse issues. GMOs in themselves are not bad, so long as we see them in the correct light. And we should not mix the issues of genetically modified crops with transgenics. Now, when you talk about transgenics, it's a different issue. We have genetically modified crops that are not transgenics. And a good example is Nerica rice, the new rice for Africa, which has transformed rice production for less than 7 years from 16 million tons to 23 million tons in West Africa alone. So I believe it's most important that, as I said, let's face the basics. Let's make use of existing technologies. Let's put the policies, in, the right policies in place. Let's ensure we have genuine political commitment by African leaders to transform the economies. And agriculture has been proven over decades to be the engine for economic growth. That's what IFAD is all about, first and foremost, before we start looking at most intractable problems through biotechnology.
Yes, good morning. Given this is on IP and public policy, I'd like to hear your views on what is the correct way forward when you have life-threatening issues like the current influenza pandemic, and you have a lot of deliberations of health authorities with major pharmaceutical and vaccine producers. Should these deliberations be totally transparent and accessible to the public, given these are majority cases, publicly listed companies? So far, what we have seen in deliberations between WHO, WTO and WIPO have fallen short of that. And I was wondering if there's possibility of revising or revisiting this strategy. Thanks.
Will, the question is about transparency. Yeah. Well, I think that you have to allow a certain amount of time for secretariats to have discussions amongst themselves as to how they can join together to contribute to the assessment of whether, for example, in the case of H1N1, there might be any trade or intellectual property obstacles. That's a work that can properly be done by secretariats as a scientific, as it were, analysis. You refer then also to discussions that take place with major pharmaceutical companies, and I think these are discussions that took place principally within the WHO, so I'm not really in a position to comment on those and the particular process that may have been followed with respect to them.
In the case of H1N1 and the issue which you mentioned, which is vaccines, IP is usually not the biggest problem with vaccines. Most vaccines technologies are off patent, including sometimes new vaccines. The main problem, and we've been working on that with WHO and WIPO, the main problem for vaccines is A, production, is there the necessary capacity, and second, the technology problem, which is addressing a virus, the mutation of which has never been experienced. So finding a vaccine in absence of any model for simulating the mutation is just running after the ball. So these are the real big problem. IP, in many ways, at that stage, is not a major problem. Now, then there's the problem, once you've got the vaccines, the treatment, and whether or not then IP issues come into play. To my knowledge, we, at this stage, don't have a problem like this. Now, you may be right that discussions between pharmaceutical producers and, let's say, procurement authorities, whether they are national or international, are not always totally transparent. I'm not that surprised by this. Very often, it's a price negotiation, and the existence of the possibility of recourseing to compulsory licensing is there in the discussion. Now, how does it exactly play? You know, what's the exact margin which appears at the end of the day? I'm not surprised that it's not totally transparent. At the end of the day, what is transparent is the price and the availability. And that, those are the things on which I think we have to concentrate our mind, as low a price as possible and as widely available as possible. That's, at the end of the day, what determines, in my view, again, the failure of success of what we are trying to do together in this field.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Thank you very much. bien, merci, de rien.